Welcome to the Pirates of Report podcast. I'm your host, Justin Osterwick. This week, I'm joined alongside Mike Federico and Joe Morales of the WSU sports staff. We sit down and react to Selection Sunday and preview some of the big-time games in the first round. We also discuss the Big East teams getting snubbed from the tournament and the Seton Hall Pirates going to compete in the NIT tournament. So sit back and relax as we preview the 2024 NCAA tournament.
Welcome, everybody. This is a little bit of a different episode here on a Monday, March 18th. We're talking about the tournament. Obviously, last night, we, as Pirate fans, got our hearts broken. And I will say, it was a heartbreaking moment. With me on the show today, I have Mike Federico and Joe Morales, who have called a lot of games this year for the Seton Hall Pirates, but also Mike Federico last night on Empire Sports Talk and Pirate Primetime, talking about their reaction to the tournament. And Joe Morales, who's been traveling with the team a lot and been able to cover them a lot. So, first things first, how are you doing this morning? And let's get into it.
Certainly, it's been have had better mornings. You know, Seton Hall missing the tournament again, especially this time around, was such a heartbreaking way. Especially seeing them being that second team out,
right,
was certainly hard to see when they threw that graphic up on the Selection Sunday show, but. You know, a lot of lots to look forward to. There's still more postseason basketball ahead for Seton Hall, so a couple cool opportunities ahead.
Yeah.
So, first of all, the Pirates Overboard podcast. What a treat to be on here. Let me just say, I am a 7-time rec baseball champion. So I have a little athlete in me. I do. Which is probably more than Mike Federico, I gotta say. Does Jonathan Luters have 7 rec championships?
I don't know. We'll have to ask him.
We'll have to ask him. But I might be more acclimated for the show than he is.
I don't even think I played rec for 7 years.
No, it was a blast. It wasn't a blast of seeing that, though. I didn't expect them to make it last night. I really didn't after the way that the other conference tournaments went. Seton Hall was done relatively early, and teams like NC State and Oregon and Colorado going on runs didn't help Seton Hall. But I know we're going to dive into it a bit later, and I'll try and save it for then, guys. But it is not a good look that the committee, all they care about is the metrics and how you played in your conference tournament.
Yeah.
It's sickening, guys.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing that I saw scrolling through Twitter last night after everything was done, and obviously following Seton Hall Pirates stuff, you're going to be on Big East basketball Twitter for a while, and it's burning there for a while as people are very upset. But I think this what I found the most interesting, KenPom ranking the Big East tournament as the second highest or hardest conference, I guess you can say the second best conference. Mountain West ranked 6th or 7th. That is shocking to me, that Mountain West getting 6 teams in to the Big East's 3. Obviously, those 3 Big East teams are going to be fantastic, and I think right now as a show and as the 3 of us here, we're a big Let's Go Big East schools in the tournament. Let's go UConn. Let's go Marquette. Let's go Creighton. And show what the Big East can do. The 3 teams that were left out that were big ones for the Big East, Providence, St. John's, and Seton Hall. St. John's not even making – or Providence, not even making it to the last 4 out, sadly, with Seton Hall being 2 spots behind. So let's dive into the Seton Hall aspect of things, just missing the tournament. And I want to get you guys' perspective on this. That triple overtime game against Creighton, where there was that foul called in the second overtime, that what shouldn't have been a foul, it was a steal for the Pirates, an easy layup, but they called a foul on the floor. What were some things throughout the season that, if you can look back, Mike, that you can say, if we had one more win here or there, would have gotten us into the tournament?
There certainly were at that point in the season. There was a lot of bid stealers this time around come the tournament, so you can't say, you know, it wasn't all just based on, you know, the committee and the bid stealers. Seton Hall did play a part in that, you know, at certain points they just didn't get the job done, which is expected. You're not going to be perfect all the time. But they finished 4th in the Big East, which is the second, well, that we know of is the second best conference in the country. But a team like Colorado State can finish 7th in the Mountain West and still get an at-large bid is mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they had 24 wins. But, like, they don't play anybody in the non-conference slate. Seton Hall struggled early on in the non-conference slate, which we can talk about that, which I think you're diving into a little bit here, is like, is going down into halftime by double digits out in San Diego to USC and in Iowa, does that hurt? Yes.
Yes.
Is getting blown out by Baylor hurt? Yes. But in that Baylor game, there was a call right before halftime. There was a charge called on Adewusu.
Yeah.
And it was a very questionable call, and it flipped the script of that game. It was going to be a 7-point game going into halftime. The charge got called. Seton Hall then lost possession of the basketball, and Baylor knocked down, of course, they knocked down a three.
Of course.
And it turned into a double-digit lead for the Bears. So things like that, there's tiny moments that, I mean, that one really sticks out to me, but there's tiny moments in that non-conference slate where certain things could have gone differently. Seton Hall outplayed USC and Iowa in the second half of both those games, unable to get it done in the first half, however. Same thing with Baylor, with that call that went into Baylor's favor and they knocked down three. Now you're going down to double digits again. And then it doesn't help that your only win against a Power 5 team in the non-conference schedule comes against a Missouri team that went 0-18 SEC. So that doesn't help. But then you look at the conference slate and you look at how hot this team started off with, beating UConn, beating Providence, beating Marquette. And you're like, okay, it's time to go. It's time for this team to roll. And then there's the Creighton game where it could have been Richmond needed to knock down one more free throw, or the officials blow the whistle on the 5 seconds, or they don't call the foul on the floor instead of on the shot, and they count the layup. There's so many things that happened. I mean, triple overtime game is nuts. So many things happened in that. And then you look at Richmond missing out on the Providence game with an injury. If he's healthy, do the Pirates win that game? Who knows? So there's certainly games that could have gone in Seton Hall's favor, but at the end of the day, I still think that they still had the resume to prove that they should have been in the NCAA tournament. It's just there were so many bid stealers this time around.
Yeah.
I don't know, guys. I'm looking at the standings. I look at the games. I can't find a reason why Seton Hall wouldn't make it. And, I mean, listen, you're the best conference of college basketball. 9 of the 11 teams in the conference finish with 9 or more conference wins. Think about that.
It's incredible. Yeah.
Think about that. This is by far the most powerful conference in college basketball. I don't want to hear about the Big 12. I don't want to hear about the SEC. Those conferences have upwards of 14 or 15 teams in them. The Big East has 11 teams. And 9 of them were at least a game away from being 500.
It's incredible.
Remarkable. It's remarkable. And to use metrics, and Mike, you were at all these big non-conference games. You saw how non-competitive they were through most of them. Baylor especially, the beginning of USC, the beginning of Iowa, wasn't pretty. How about Rutgers, guys?
Yeah, that's a tough
bad
one.
Loss. And you can say, well, it's a rivalry game, and they play them every year, so is it even a big game or whatever? People are, you know, you can use that argument. But guys, you can't lose to a team like Rutgers. And this is not the reason why Seton Hall didn't make it, but it's certainly a blemish on their resume. You can't lose to a bad team like Rutgers, who can't get out of the first round of the Big Ten tournament, who played awful down the stretch in conference play, and also played nobody in out-of-conference either. Rutgers is worse than some of those Mountain West teams. They play nobody. They almost lost to Stonehill this year. It's a bad loss. And again, you could say, well, they play Rutgers every year. It's a big game. Anything can happen. I don't buy that. They play Wagner every year, too. They have a problem playing Wagner? No. You can't lose to a team like Rutgers. It set a bad tone. But that was kind of the turning point, though. Because they went into conference play, and they pick up all these accolades. You beat UConn, Marquette, Providence on the road, when the only other team to beat Providence on the road was Seton Hall before then.
Right.
Guys, this is a tournament team. It is. Oh. They were screwed out of the tournament. But they have every one of the accolades necessary to make the tournament. But they fell short.
Yeah, it's there's no question. Now, looking at the results of the tournament, you wonder if that St. John's winning the tournament would have moved that needle or not, because St. John's wasn't even in the last four in.
Well, the conversation, too, was staying on Seton Hall was like, when they played Villanova that second-to-last game, you were on the call for that. It was like, okay, the winner of this game is going to make it to the tournament. Right. They're a lock. Seton Hall wins that one. It's like, okay, now Seton Hall's a lock to make the tournament. Then it was, okay, the winner of this St. John's Seton Hall game in the quarterfinal of the biggest tournament is a lock to make the tournament. St. John's wins, and St. John's is not even in the last four out. It is crazy. And that's when it brings up the question of, is the disrespect to the Big East, how far can you go?
Right.
Because since 2011, the Big East has had 6 national champions.
Mm-hmm.
6 in the Big East. And a lot of that has been UConn and Villanova, but still, like, how many national championships has the Mountain West won
right.
recently?
Yeah.
Not that I can remember. who's the favorite right now to win the national championship again?
The UConn Huskies, baby.
The Connecticut Huskies are a powerhouse, and I don't want to say might be the best team in the country. I think they are the best team in the country.
Right.
So for the Big East to get snubbed and to only have 3 teams named is just straight up disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw head coach Dan Hurley of Connecticut trying to preach for the Big East and for teams like Providence and Seton Hall and St. John's, because it also makes not only the Big East look better, but UConn look better.
Right.
Like, hey, look, yeah, we're in the Big East, but we also have 6 tournament teams, and here's what we had to go through.
Right.
There's a lot of head-scratching going on after the committee announced their bracket.
It is, but there is an upside. As you mentioned earlier, we do have some more postseason basketball coming up with the NIT. We accepted the bid last night. We are the 1 seed, number 1 overall seed, Mike? Or,
number 1 overall. Yeah.
Yeah.
With everybody, yeah.
So that will be at Walsh starting on Wednesday as the Pirates take on St. Joe's. And look, and I wrote it down here in our little notes here, but this could be pivotal for Coach Shaheen Holloway's program, because you get snubbed out of the tournament. You looked good throughout the year. There were some down points, but there was a lot of high points, and you want to get rewarded with that, with obviously an NCAA tournament bid. But you get into the NIT for the 2nd straight year for Coach Holloway. You got to feel for the players, because they gave it their all throughout the whole season, and I can only imagine being an athlete like that, where it's like you grind out this season, and then it really comes down to, what, 12 people in a room to decide your fate, basically. And now it's not the postseason that they all wanted, but you get the opportunity to make a name for yourselves in this NIT. Boost your stock up for some that may look to move on, whether that's the draft or for next season. So this is an interesting year. This is an interesting NIT tournament with St. Joe's first. Possibly, we were talking about in the office, LSU possibly coming here, an SEC school coming to Walsh Gymnasium, the little gym here. So, Joe, I'm going to start with you. What are some of the key takeaways for playing in the NIT, and what are you kind of looking forward to as we get into that tournament?
Well, I've been telling everybody who asked me, I think Seton Hall beats St. Joe's by at least 25.
Yeah.
This is an angry team. I feel bad for St. Joe's. You know, Seton Hall is angry as heck, guys. Let's call it like it is. They are going to go into this game, and they're going to play Kadoi Richmond and Dre Davis 40 minutes and beat the heck out of St. Joe's. It's going to happen. I also think it's big for next year, though, guys.
Yeah.
If you're Shaheen Holloway and this is your staff, and you're trying to convince a Kadoi Richmond or a Dre Davis or a Delonte Wusu, hey, let's run this back. We know what we're capable of. We have 2 4-star recruits coming in,
mm-hmm.
Isaiah Coleman of the year. This is a team that can be a 6 seed next year in the NCAA tournament, a 5 seed, if they take care of business.
Yeah.
They have every possibility to do that next year.
Mm-hmm.
And you have this chip on your shoulder now, the tournament telling you you're not, or the committee telling you that you weren't good enough to make the tournament this year. I like the prospect of them coming back and playing next year and running this back, because you don't have a Dallas next year, you don't have a Betiaco.
So yeah.
You got to fill 2 spots there. But they have a really cool opportunity to stick it to the tournament, to stick it to the country,
mm-hmm.
by running this back next year and trying all over again. Because I really do think if they come back next year, let's just say hypothetically all 3 of them come back. If they do, this is a team that can be a favorite in one of, or in the first 2 or 3 games of the NCAA tournament next year.
Yeah.
Sweet 16 expectations. They can do that by running this back. It's possible, guys.
Yeah, I could definitely see it happening. The chip on your shoulder. I'm going to go to you, Mike, now. But we talked about it, too, prior to. Like, there should be extra motivation for this NIT. I don't know if you've looked at the St. Joe's matchup at all, but what are some of the things that the Pirates have to do to come out with a win? Obviously, Joe, you said it perfectly. Kadari and Dre are going to probably play 40 minutes and really want to score that. Even coming off the Big East tournament game, where they were really shut down by St. John. So what are some things that you're looking for them to come out with a win on Wednesday?
It's going
to
be what it has been all season long, and it's going to be they have to knock down shots.
Yeah.
Their defense doesn't slump, and so that's why that quarterfinal game in the tournament against St. John's was so – it raised a lot of eyebrows because it was so uncharacteristic mm-hmm. of Seton Hall to be that lackluster on defense. I mean, St. John's dominated in the paint, and that's how they were able to capitalize. And then once Seton Hall realized that St. John's was dominating in the paint, they tried to focus on, you know, clogging up all the lanes to the basket, and then that's when the Johnnies were just knocking down outside shots. So yeah. Seton Hall really just had no answer on the defensive end for St. John's, and that's when that bad defense turned into the bad offense. Seton Hall does a very good job in transition. Mm-hmm. And when they have those key stops defensively, whether it's a block or a steal, or I mean, I've never seen a team have more shot clock violations than Seton Hall. They force teams
yeah.
to have so many shot clock violations. Like, that is something that they pride themselves on. So if they can do that against St. Joseph's, who is 21-13, like, they can very easily go on a nice little run here. All you have to do is win five games. I know it's right. easier said than done, but you win five games, you're the NIT champion. And I know the NIT is not as highly regarded as it was, you know, way back in yeah. the day, but it is still a postseason tournament. And if you can win it all, that definitely puts you on some radars coming next year, not only for, you know, preseason rankings or anything like that, mm-hmm. but certainly for the NCAA tournament. And if Seton Hall is able to run the table here and win five games, they'll finish 25-12. 25 wins in a season
yeah.
with an NIT championship under your belt is a very good thing. And who knows, maybe next year they'll start top 30, top 40 in the net. And we all know with the net, if you start high, you're not moving down. It was we've right. seen that with FAU and, yeah. and all those teams. So I think Seton Hall can very easily run the table here. It's just going to come down to knocking down their shots. And mm-hmm. and I think, too, if even if you win, you know, I think you got to win two games here to really, really make a yeah. statement. So if you can win two games here and make it to the semifinals out there in Indianapolis at Hinkle Fieldhouse, then that's how you can really create that recruiting pitch to whether it's your returning seniors that you're trying to come back or some transfer portal guys yeah. or any other incoming freshmen.
I was just about to touch on that with transfer portal. That starts today, which John Fanta tweeted out, which is kind of sad to think about because you got teams that are going to the tournament. And that should be the most exciting time. We're getting ready for a tournament, but then there's the focus of teams needing to bulk up on the transfer stuff. Joe, do you want
to
say something?
I wanted to add on to the NIT point there. I think it's worth noting, too. This goes back to my point also about making the tournament next year. Aside from North Texas, who won the NIT last year, Xavier the year before that wins the NIT. They go to the Sweet 16 the next
year. The year following, yeah. The
year before that, Memphis wins the NIT. In 2022, Memphis wins the first round game and goes to the round of 32. The year before that, or 2 years rather, because there's no tournament because of COVID, mm-hmm. Texas. The tournament gets canceled the next year, obviously, but Texas was a 4 seed mm-hmm. in the March Madness tournament. Guys, if you win the NIT, your chances of going on a run the next year are pretty high. So it's worth playing in this tournament. And that goes back to the conversation also of would Gene Holloway accept a bid like this.
Right.
You should accept the bid to play more basketball. You're going to make a statement that we deserve to make the tournament, and we're going to make a statement that we deserve to be here next year, and we're going to prove it to you by winning this thing.
Right. Yeah, you went the opposite route of what Rick Pitino did with St. John's. Yeah.
Which I think was the wrong decision. I was listening to Pirate Primetime last night, and you guys agreed that, you know, Shaheen Holloway shouldn't take the bid.
Well, I said that he should. Joe Matthews. Name dropping here on yes. Pirates Overboard.
And I disagree with that because I don't think it makes Rick Pitino look good. Indiana has declined the bid, I believe it's 2 years in a row now, or two of the last 3 years.
Oklahoma yeah. denied the bid as
Oklahoma
well.
Oklahoma yeah. did as well. It's not a good look.
No.
It's a terrible look. Play postseason basketball.
And to your point, it gives you that postseason experience, which it's an easier postseason in the sense that you can sleep in your own bed for a couple of games. You get the home crowd. Obviously, it's not going to be at the Pru. It's going to be
here
at Walsh.
Seton Hall's a top seed.
Exactly.
So the NIT runs through Walsh and Mason.
Exactly, which is crazy to think about.
And what's funny also is there are five Big East teams in this 32-team tournament, right?
Yeah.
There could have been six with St. John's. Think about that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
There could be a Big East Final Four.
So nine out of the 11 teams in the Big East are in a postseason
yep.
tournament.
Yeah. Which is incredible.
Probably
obviously,
again,
not the one.
This is not a powerful conference.
Which that
makes zero sense.
The game I've circled is if both Providence and Seton Hall win two games. They're in a semifinal, and you both know here where you know Coach Holloway and Coach English of Providence will be ready to go, ramping it up. So let's look at the overall landscape of the tournament. Obviously, that's going to be a big talking point throughout the week. The round of the first four in games are tomorrow night, I think, right? Tomorrow and Wednesday. First round of 64 games start on Thursday. So let's talk about the Big East specifically here, because obviously Big East show right now with wanting to show that this is one of the best conferences in the country. I talked about three talking points, and if each one of you want to talk on all three or one of specifically for each team. So UConn, top seed, overall seed, they're in the East, but you can kind of argue it might be the toughest path to get through with teams like FAU, who was in the Final Four last year, San Diego State in the championship game. You got Illinois in that that bracket. You got Iowa State. Very, very difficult top teams in there. You got Marquette as a two seed in the South. And will Tyler Kolek be healthy coming into the tournament? I think that's the big question mark from them. They have a first-round game against Western Kentucky. And then for Creighton, I think who could really make a run, but the big thing for them is will they live and die by the three, which they always do, but will those shots go in? In the Big East tournament when they lost to Providence, they went 6-for-26 from three. That's not going to win you basketball games, especially in the tournament. They have a first-round game against Akron. So, Mike, I'm going to start with you. Which storyline is most intriguing to you? And you could, like I said, touch on all three, touch on one, but What do you like out of the Big East side for the tournament?
Well, I'm just going to come out and say that I'm totally pulling for all Big East teams right now. Because and they all have a chance to be in the Final Four. So that would be something if
that'd
three
awesome.
Of the four teams were from the Big East just to you know, prove something. But UConn definitely does have a very hard path. You look at the teams, you know, that are in that East region. You know, a team that you didn't even bring up, too, is Auburn.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Auburn is
And BYU.
Yeah. BYU. I have BYU going, I believe, to the Elite Eight in my bracket, and then they're losing to UConn. I think UConn's winning it all again. I just think that they're too good of a team, and they just have so many great players. I mean, they probably have, like, the three best guards in the country with Castle, Newton, and Spencer. But UConn does have a very tough path to the national championship. So I feel like if they can make it to the Elite Eight Final Four, I don't see who else can stop them, really.
Right.
And I do agree with you on the Creighton point, if they live and die by the three, because that is why Creighton lost to St. John's, because they just could not knock down the three. And you saw them struggle against Villanova when they couldn't knock down the three, and that's when they had that huge lead, and then Nova fought their way back. And it's just because Creighton was unable to knock down shots. You have Ryan Kalkbrenner at the center, the Big East Defensive Player of the Year. He is an absolute force down low in the paint. He's just so massive down there. He just takes up so much space. So you're going to have to beat Creighton on the outside shot. And if you can go shot for shot with Creighton, you can beat him.
You're right.
But if it's Creighton makes two shots, you make one shot. Creighton makes three, you make one. You're done. And Creighton can very easily run the table in the Midwest. And if you look at the Midwest, I wouldn't say it's a weak region, but Tennessee has shown their flaws. Now, I'm saying Creighton has shown their flaws as well, but Tennessee has shown their flaws. We all know Purdue in the first round. we know that history. Kansas, who knows if they're going to be fully healthy with Hunter Dickinson, and then you have Gonzaga and Texas and all of them. So there's a lot of unknowns in the Midwest. There's a lot of teams that have flaws. I wouldn't say there's a team that's 100% perfect. I would argue that UConn and maybe Houston are like the two perfect teams in the country, but Houston got blown out in their
by Iowa State,
by Iowa State in their Big 12 championship game, and you look at what UConn did in their conference championship game in the, I guess, not the second best conference according to some committee members, but I do think that if UConn can run the table in the East region, I don't see anybody else, whether it's in the South, Midwest, or West, stopping them.
Right. Joe, what about you?
Another thing, too, with the UConn side of the bracket, Iowa State's there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Come on, that's a team that I think has a chance to win a national championship.
And Iowa State, there was conversations of them being a one seed in March Madness.
Right.
That is a really, really good team. I think UConn does run away with it, though. The only team in that bracket that really scares me for them is Iowa State, and they can't reach them until the Elite Eight anyway. So I have UConn going all the way in that bracket. I have UConn running the back and winning the national championship with you. I think they're going to run away with that with the east side of the bracket. They don't got to get on a plane to go anywhere.
Right.
Brooklyn, Boston, Houston.
And that's we know how Connecticut fans travel.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not worried about UConn. They're playing four home games before the it's not that big of a deal. I'm going to give you a sleeper team here, okay?
Okay.
Grand Canyon.
Okay.
29 games, I want to say. I don't know the number in front of me exactly.
Mm-hmm.
They ran away with their conference. Ran away. And it's a team that was not talked about all year. They only lost three games this year.
Interesting.
This is a team as a 12 seed going against St. Mary's. A little mid-major battle here. I think GCU has a nice path to to the Sweet 16. So you get Alabama. Alabama's shaky in these tournaments.
They are.
Far.
No.
I think GCU has an opportunity as a 12 seed to get to the Sweet 16. I would not be shocked if they get there.
Mm-hmm.
And that would presumably put them up against North Carolina.
Right.
With who have jumped up and had a number one seed this year, just like I think it's old times again. North Carolina is a one seed again.
Yeah.
But that will be obviously a tough battle. But Grand Canyon, for me, is a team I'm looking out for. And guys, I'll give you one more storyline. I have three Big East teams in my Final Four.
I would love that.
With a healthy Tyler Kolek, with the way Creighton can shoot the ball, and my pick for UConn to win the national championship, this is a three-team Big East Final Four. No better way to stick it to the committee than have that.
That'd be fantastic. I do think one of the storylines for me, as the whole tournament goes, I think the West is just so weak compared to the other three. Like UNC, they were the last, I think, one seed. I think they're legit, but then you go down the Mississippi State, Michigan State. That's Michigan State barely made it in on the skin of their teeth. I like your Grand Canyon pick, Joe. Alabama, Charleston. Alabama obviously deserves to get in, but they are very hit or miss. They got to score about 100 points to win a game. Clemson, New Mexico. Colgate, Baylor. You've seen the flaws in Baylor. Nevada, Dayton. Dayton, who, like, how did you get in?
Crazy.
And I think Arizona's the weakest, too. The Pac-12 was so bad this year.
And they had four teams make it.
Yeah, which is incredible.
More than the Big East.
Yes, but when you look at that, however, like, Oregon winning the at-large, upsetting Arizona. Should it be, like, probably two, maybe three?
Yeah. I mean, for the longest time, too, Colorado was that bubble team.
Right.
So you could say the Pac-12 was probably two, max three teams. But, again, Oregon went on that run. And it's the same thing that happened with NC State and the ACC. They went on a run.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I don't want to say they stole a bit from Seton Hall, but they're one of the teams that definitely stole bids from a lot of teams.
Yeah.
And now UNC is sitting at that one spot. And UNC, I would definitely say, is the weakest one. And we know what Purdue's history is in the first round, but still, Purdue is, you can tell the growth Purdue has made over the last 2 years. And Purdue is still a powerhouse of a team.
Right.
It's going to come tournament time to see if, you know, all that is true, but the West is certainly not that strong. And I can see a team like Baylor, or even like one of the higher seeds, like FAU last year,
right?
That went on a big run, or San Diego State that went on a big run last year, make it all the way to the Final Four in the West region just because of how weak it is.
Mm-hmm. And I like what you said about Creighton in that Midwest. I think one of the coworkers I worked with downstairs before coming up here today, if Creighton can make it and they're playing Purdue in that Elite Eight game, you would love their chances because you have the defensive player of the year in the Big East, Kalkbrenner, on Edie. Size comparison, size matchup, you're in a good spot, which a lot of teams in the Big Ten can't say the same. So you would love that matchup. Now, with Creighton, I think they're really the most difficult game, maybe Tennessee. Maybe St. Peter's goes on a magical run again. Who knows? They're another 15 seed taking on a two.
They got respected by the tournament, by the way. That was a team that could have easily been a first four team. To get a 15 seed, the tournament really does respect them after what happened a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Rightfully so.
Yeah, for sure. And you look at that now, and St. Peter's maybe takes down Tennessee. Who knows? So as we wrap up here, obviously we are a big Big East podcast here throughout the tournament. We all kind of are consensus like, yeah, we really like UConn. But each one of us, let's give a team that's, I don't want to say a dark horse, but like, who's that second team where in the back of your head, like, yeah, they can make a run, they can win a national title, they can possibly beat a UConn in a championship game. I'm gonna start first here. I think if I'm gonna pick anybody, it's gonna be nothing shocking. I'm gonna take Houston. Their defense is legit. Obviously, that Iowa State game was brutal in the Big 12 championship game, but they have a good path. They can either play Nebraska and Texas A&M in that next round game. I think they can take care of business. Maybe if it's Wisconsin that makes it through, I think they can take care of that. Like, when you look through that region, I think they can take care of a lot of teams. I think their hardest matchup could be a Florida or a Marquette just because of size. But I think they take care of business, and I think they are a team that – not a sleeper because they're a one seed, but I think they can make a deep run.
Kentucky. Sorry, Mike.
Oh, you're good.
Kentucky is a team that is just oozing talent. I mean, I think about some of the – I guess you can call them local. They're from Jersey. DJ Wagner and Aaron Bradshaw, two kids that played at Camden, won a state championship here in Jersey. They're only freshmen right now, both with NBA draft hopes at the end of the year. They struggled. Kentucky struggled, too.
Mm-hmm.
This was a pick to win the national championship earlier this year. I think they can, as a three seed, get themselves together, rally around each other, and you have these two stud freshmen who can lead you to a national championship with DJ Wagner and Aaron Bradshaw. As a three seed, Kentucky, I mean, looking at their path right now, Oakland, and Oakland beat... They beat DePaul or Creighton earlier in the year. I forgot who they beat. They beat one of those two teams in the Big East. I'm blanking on who it was. Texas Tech, Kentucky can run the can run with them. Then they get Marquette. That'll be their toughest opponent before you get to Houston. I think Kentucky has what it takes to take out of Marquette. I'm not picking them to do it, but look out for Kentucky to go on a run here and win the national championship.
My dark horse team, which is not really a dark horse, I mean, it's going to be really tough too because I'm picking this out of the East region, is going to be the Cougars of BYU.
There we go.
BYU is a six seed here. In their conference schedule, the Big 12, we all know Big 12 is the best conference in the country just because they have 95 teams in their conference, but they finished fifth in the Big 12. They finished 23-10. And over the course of their schedule, they beat six teams that are now tournament teams.
Wow.
And they split with Baylor. They split with Iowa State, and something that's weird about it is that they blew out Iowa State when BYU played them at home. Mm. They beat them by 15, and then when they played Iowa State on the road, they only lost by 5.
Wow.
So BYU, and they also split with Baylor. So BYU is a team that I feel like can make some noise, especially with what they did in the Big 12. Like finishing fifth in the Big 12 says something because of how tough the Big 12 is with Iowa State and Houston and Baylor. I mean, those are 1, 2, and 3 seeds right there in the tournament. So splitting with Baylor, they beat Kansas, they split with Iowa State, they lost by 7 to Houston. So they have the resume, and they're not blowout losses to these top teams in March Madness. So I think BYU can make some noise. It's going to be really tough getting past UConn if they do match up with them. And who knows, they might match up again against Iowa State. So that's going to be the rubber match between the two there. So I think the Cougars can make some noise in March Madness.
Yeah, that is for sure. And I can't wait to watch. I think March Madness is probably my favorite event to watch. Just so much going on and to keep track of. But we're going to wrap up here. Both of you, thank you so much. Any final thoughts before we sign off for today?
Seton Hall, stubbed. Absolute disgrace.
No, Justin, I just want to say thank you for having us on.
Thank you, yes. Thank you.
But, yeah, Seton Hall was snubbed, 100%. They were snubbed. But, no, thank you for having us on. It's been a pleasure listening to you and Jonathan Luters, all the amazing stuff that you guys have done for the past 39 episodes, I believe. I believe this is episode number 40.
This will be 40. This is 40. 41 is done, but it's just needs to hit send, and then we'll have 42 out next Monday. Like, it's
in the fourth wall, though.
Yeah. Hey. I don't know which, some wall, but you know, some behind the scenes action, you know, as a host and producer, you got to let the people know. But yes, of course, I love doing this. Maybe we'll do another one soon after the round of 64, 32, because this is we're a college basketball school. We got to talk about it. And it's huge. Obviously having Jaden Bediako and Alamir Dawes and Azana Baines and on the show, which is huge. And we're going to touch in maybe some women's NIT action a little later, either this week or next week, eventually, once we get behind some mics. So that will do it from us here in the studio. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Joe, for coming on, and we'll see you next time.